Hello, Internet. Yes, it's an unfamiliar voice, but perhaps that's apt given these unfamiliar times and the unfamiliar challenges that we're facing. My name is Finn Ross Russell, and today I'll be guiding you in a collective reflection process about March 18th, 2020, and the unthinkable chain of events kicked into motion that day by the first ever cancellation of the Eurovision Song Contest. As the world transitioned into lockdown and the only avenues available to engage with the outside world became digital, the entire landscape of the contest we love changed dramatically. On this podcast, you will hear from the journalist.
I'm Katja, I live in the Netherlands. I started reporting for Eurovision in 2010.
The podcaster.
My name is Eric Nelson. I am a Minnesota-based writer and I am co-host of 12 Points from America.
The fan.
I'm Melanie, and I'm a recent Eurovision fan.
And the singer.
My name is Leslie Roy, born and raised in Ireland, in Balbriggan, County Dublin.
Our digital Eurovision quartet. What changes did COVID bring? Were they ultimately positive? Is there a bright future for digital engagement around the Eurovision Song Contest? No matter who you were, there was a sense from a very early stage that something wasn't quite right about coronavirus and its potential effect on the contest. For Katia Black, that feeling began as early as the beginning of the month and was associated with a sense of disbelief as to what was going on.
I was cooperating in a podcast of a friend of mine who works a reporter for a big newspaper here, where we discussed the songs, of course, and that was, I believe, the beginning, the 2nd of March, where things were a bit strange, as you might also remember when you heard about Corona or COVID, as we might call it, but you don't know what is going on. It's a strange kind of phase when I look back at it now, but I couldn't believe that Eurovision would be cancelled. I mean, it was not a possibility in my mind. And when lockdown started in Europe, I don't know about you, but I was thinking, oh, this is going to take 2-3 weeks and then we're back to normal. You know, your mind just can't get through it that this is really happening. And then I believe a friend of mine sent me a message. It was the 18th of March. By the time then, I was expecting a bit that it could be cancelled, because things started to be cancelled around us. And I answered like, oh yeah, we expected that, didn't we? But it hit me really hard, to tell you the truth. It hit me really hard.
By contrast, Eric Nelson's story started on the fateful night before the announcement was made.
So I had been chatting with some of the podcast folks the night before it had been canceled, and we were talking about, I don't know that this COVID thing's going to go away, you know, and a lot of it, I think, is you just don't want to accept the fact that, like, there's just no way that we can have something where 40 or more countries are all coming together into one relatively tight place and do this thing. There's just no way. And I think we're all slowly kind of coming to the realization, you know, that we can try to rationalize wanting to do this thing all we want, but it's just not a good idea. And the night before, I remember not sleeping especially well, because it just seemed like the momentum was heading in the direction of this just isn't going to happen. And then I woke up, and it ended up being at around 9 a.m. our time in Minnesota. And the tweet came out saying, we're not doing this. And I remember thinking, okay,
Eric's perspective on the cancellation was further compounded by the significance of this particular edition of the contest.
This year was the first year I had gotten accreditation. This was going to be the first year I was going to go to the contest.
For Melanie Tutakova, her engagement with the competition only really started following the announcement and its subsequent media coverage.
But there were quite a few articles in different newspapers and online websites about it. It was quite a big event, even if it wasn't always a Eurovision-centered website. Everybody seemed to be kind of surprised, and it was very, very weird to have such a big event cancelled. It feels like they were building up to announcing it eventually, but it's true that it's not something you expect, since a lot of other events went online or decided to do without an audience. But having Eurovision cancelled like that is a bit weird, because I feel like they would have had other possibilities if they would have wanted to.
Leslie Roy had an idea of what was coming on March 18th, but it didn't make the news any harder to take. Nonetheless, she channeled her feelings into doing something positive for the community.
After the EBU spoke to all the heads of delegation, Michael called me and we had a chat, and that, I believe, was on the 18th of March. And yeah, I mean, I was like the other 40 artists, I'm sure. I was very, very upset. I think because we had been watching it and slowly seeing so many things get cancelled, and there was a bit of a cushion, so to speak. Well, it wasn't too much of a shock out of nowhere. Just like, say, like last year, if someone just canceled the Eurovision for no reason. So I think there was a bit of an emotional cushion because we knew this could happen. But I still feel that people were enjoying Story My Life so much, and we were getting such a good buzz from it and a great reaction, and it was doing so well here and across the board, is that I think I went automatically into a place of, okay, how can I at least give the Eurovision fans, the Irish Eurovision fans, something fun and exciting and pieces of me in the midst of all this? So I don't want to say I went into like fix mode, because that would be the wrong word, but I went into, let me still keep working on this in a different way from my apartment at home.
Next, I asked the quartet about their responses in terms of their relationship to the contest. How could they make the most out of the situation that had unfolded? Katia's radio station immediately went into crisis management mode and struggled to find time for Eurovision, even one on home soil, in the midst of handling the effects of a pandemic.
To tell you the truth, they were not really busy. Once it was cancelled, it was cancelled. Everything stopped and they were just busy with. They had to go on with broadcasting with as few people as possible. I was just looking forward and I was curious. I was very curious how it was going to be from home ground, because I'd never experienced it. I was looking forward to the colleagues I've met through the years, showing them around, or, you know, telling them about the Netherlands, as they do when I'm in their countries when they've won.
Eric wanted to work with the rest of the 12 Points from America team to be responsive to the news whilst also honouring the class of 2020.
We recorded a sort of a first reaction show. I think it might have even been the day that the show was cancelled, just to sort of talk to each other about how we were feeling and that sort of thing. We all agreed that we put together a lengthy 6 or 7 episode preview, or we planned one for the contest that we were going to record and then release as we led up to the contest itself. And then when we were over there, we were going to do daily snippets or whatever. Obviously the daily stuff didn't happen because we weren't over there, but we felt like these songs still need to be given the respect they deserve. We're going to do the preview exactly like we planned. We're going to review the songs. We're going to pick our favorites, and we're going to treat this like nothing has changed. And so that's what we did. We recorded all the preview stuff, kind of did our own voting and gave our points out and that sort of thing. And then did a little bit of speculation as to what we think might have happened, had it all happened. But there's a certain, I don't want to say beauty, but there's a certain, I don't know, it almost feels like a weird gift to Eurovision fans that we're going to have this contest filled with great songs, and we will never, ever know which one would have won, that fans get to speculate and argue on that until the end of time.
Melanie had never seen a Eurovision semi-final, and so I was curious to learn what it was like to engage with so much new Eurovision content.
Well, the first thing I can think of is having all these songs, because usually by the point I make it to the grand final, a few of them have been eliminated and didn't make it. So it's actually quite nice to have everything and to listen through it and to be able to just enjoy it on your own time without having kind of a time limit. Because it's true, if you plan to watch the grand final, which is the most easy one to watch since it happens on a kind of a Friday or Saturday night, basically it's a weekend and you can kind of plan for it, whereas in the week it might be a bit more difficult. And here you kind of had all still the songs were there and you didn't have any deadline to listen to them, so you could actually take your time. But also there were quite a few programs still on the BBC and the Nikki tutorials interviews, and they were actually nice. It was really interesting. It offers you another perspective, and with all the home concerts, another way of enjoying Eurovision. I think they made a really great digital transition. They didn't just say, okay, so see you in a year, bye-bye, and we don't say anything. It was actually nice that they used the content they might have used if the contest would have gone ahead. But I think this is why I feel like they could have done so well, because they had everything to make it happen online, but I guess the audience for them was a bigger priority and a big issue to not have anybody there.
Leslie threw herself into every opportunity to participate in the new online content being made available, largely out of a commitment she had made when she agreed to be the 2020 Irish representative.
I think in part, again, it was this unspoken agreement that I, something in my head I had signed to serve the Eurovision fans and to serve this song, to make sure if I put this song out there and to give it life, I was going to do whatever I could in those few weeks to still give it those legs that it would have gotten had the show continued on. I didn't want it to just die a death in the water. So, you know, I wanted to serve the people and the song. And then also I think there was, maybe looking back on it, a little bit of healing in it for me, in to kind of repair the upsetness of it all. I think by being able to do those acoustic shows and to speak to whoever wanted to talk about the Eurovision, that it helped me kind of get over the initial shock of it being gone, of a huge, you know, lifelong dream being suddenly gone very quickly. That is one of the main things I was pushing conceptually about Story of My Life, is the fact of when you do get knocked down, to try and pick yourself back up again. So I felt, had I just gone into a hole and been completely upset and, like, you know, trying to self-soothe and being in martyrdom, and that, oh, woe is me, this has happened to me and how upsetting, I would have completely been a hypocrite about what the song is actually about.
After March 18th, everything moved so quickly to become digital, with little time to consider whether the plans they made during that period were the right ones. I asked each of my interviewees to reflect on their responses and how they feel about it now. Katia was extremely positive about what the pandemic taught us about the need for creativity in times of uncertainty, and how the digital Eurovision content demonstrated this, sometimes in unexpected ways.
Well, I loved one of the things you hear about COVID, that people start getting more creative. You know, you have to sit at home, you cannot do much. And there was a lot of creativity amongst the Eurovision fans. One of the initiatives I love, which is still going on, is the Eurovision Again. They broadcast through YouTube every Saturday at 9 or 8, I believe, Central European time, an old Eurovision. And they start twittering about it and they giving points. Like, they have to... some had also a new winner, another winner as the original winner. The home concerts I loved. Because there were done from all the homes. We lost a bit of the glamour, I believe, of Eurovision. You could see that everybody was just human being, you know, and had had a home or, you know, a lousy couch or, you know, no matter if he was a big singer in, let's say, Azerbaijan or in Poland, you know, everybody was home. It was all, we were all in the same situation. Yeah, I liked it, and I think it's created a kind of unity, of course. And I believe, you know, why not do this next year again? The home, we don't know anything, but I would like to see the home concerts coming back each year. You know, like a promotion for Eurovision, and make it more personal, maybe.
For Eric, continuing to release content even after a crushing blow was a fantastic opportunity to feel close to the contest and to his fellow podcasters, even in the midst of so much unrest.
I'm glad that we stayed the course in terms of honoring the songs. Really, really glad we did that, because I feel like, especially for some of the artists that we know won't be back, for whatever size of a platform we have, I'm glad we got to think about things and about, I think my favorite song this year was Yes by Ben Tan from Denmark, and they're not going to be back. So it was good to talk about them a lot. I feel like Eurovision fans are passionate, and they want to talk about Eurovision and have things to do and things like that. So I'm glad that we have stuck with it and found things to talk about. At the start of June, there was some pretty significant civil unrest here in Minnesota, and so we talked about that a little bit. Talked about race in the context of Eurovision, which is an interesting discussion. Obviously, those sorts of dynamics in Europe are different than they are here, but we tried to offer some perspective, especially for folks in Europe who may be seeing what's going on in America and are confused by it. Well, to be honest, we're pretty confused too by everything that's happening here. But the 12 Points folks are my best friends, and having this show and having an opportunity to talk about something we love and to just kind of goof off and rip on each other. I feel like the rapport that we have and the repartee that we have, the back and forth and stuff, is very irreverent, and it's very genuine, because we are very good friends and we just love spending time together, even if right now we aren't able to do it in the same room. I am grateful that we have this show and we have this contest that is so rich in history and gives us so much stuff to talk about, that we're able to use it to stay in touch and to laugh together. And I'm really grateful for the Eurovision community, and particularly the other folks at 12 Points, because it allowed us to get through this really difficult and unusual and confusing time together.
The wide expanses of time that Melanie suddenly found herself faced with meant she had much more opportunity to engage with Eurovision as, when, and how she wanted, something that offered normality in the midst of an unusual cultural void.
I was on the furlough scheme at the time, so if I wanted to, I could have watched all the content all day if I wanted to, but I feel to a certain extent it did play in their favor, because it means that people who had any kind of interest could actually do it, and it offered people some kind of normality, something that was that they used to enjoy, that they might not be able to enjoy in the normal way, but they still had something. It wasn't like, oh, nothing happened. I have a background in film. If, for example, what Ken did is nothing happened, everything got shut down, and even the films that got selected, nothing happened. No, they didn't release any new content. They didn't do anything. They just kind of went into sleep and said, bye-bye, see you next year, hoping things get better. Where Eurovision, they still created new content. They still highlighted the songs and tried to do something, which I think is very positive and must have helped loads of people.
Leslie sees an opportunity within the cancellation and the associated activities to both acknowledge what could have been, but also see how things could look in May 2021.
To start off with, if the cancellation hadn't have happened, it would have been a great show. There were some fantastic songs. It would have went on as the Eurovision goes on. There would have been a winner, and it would have been a bucket list moment for me, and I would imagine a lot of the other artists to perform that night and perform those songs that all that work went into for all of those tracks and productions. So I mean, I think that's what would have happened had it gone ahead. The fact that it didn't, I feel like, and in following, I follow as much as I can online and following the artists and who's writing and who's not coming back and who's officially coming and all of these official and unofficial things. I think there's going to be such, and I think there is right now, energy and like this kind of ramp up to the show or whatever the show would be next year, that it's just going to be electric. So yeah, I think there's a lot of energy around it right now. So I hope, again, that it's just is utilized and pushed into working on great songs, and people are just ready to have fun and have a great night and a great show with some great material and great, you know, vocalists and teams from all around Europe.
And speaking of May 2021, how has COVID changed Eurovision in general? Has it made us more open to digital avenues for exploring and engaging with the contest we love? Or should we be realistic about the idea that COVID could ultimately be a serious threat to the competition's future? As somebody who knows the magic of covering contests regularly, Katya answered very quickly.
No, to tell you the truth, I'm more scared. I mean, the internet is a great thing. It's great. I mean, what would we have done without the internet in these times? But you need to be together. You need to be together at some occasions, and Eurovision is one of them. You know, you need to be together to celebrate and feel the competition between the artists and. Yeah, you need to be together. You can, you know, it's different. It's not the same online. It's just not the same. It might have contributed to some new ideas, but I'm personally not excited about a digital revolution for Eurovision. No, because the power of Eurovision is having all these 41, 2 or 3 countries together. You know, and the interaction between them is very important, which you can show online, of course, but you have to have the interaction. When you watch it on television, even though you stay at home and you're watching television live broadcast, you know, you want to see the cheering people, you want to see what's happening there, where the interaction is.
Eric is optimistic about what Eurovision could look like next year, even with COVID potentially still affecting the show.
One of the things that they talked about when they canceled the contest was they considered running it with no audience, but really felt like Eurovision is about the community and it just wouldn't be the same. That being said, I imagine that they are considering a number of contingency plans for 2021, so that one way or another there is a contest. And maybe that includes running it without an audience. I don't know. I think there will be something. I'm excited to see what it is. I'm hopeful that it can be as close to normal as possible. I also know that it might not be, but hopefully there'll be something. I hope that there's something that Americans are able to go to, somewhat selfishly, but also, I mean, I know how much it means to Sam and to Derek and some of our other friends here in the U.S. and I'd be heartbroken for them, certainly, if 2021 isn't a year where we can do that. But I know that eventually we'll be back. We'll all be able to meet in Europe somewhere. And when we do, it's going to be a really amazing experience. We'll have a lot of time to make up for it.
Melanie believes that the show organisers are going to need to make some tough decisions in the coming months, and the sooner they embrace the new possibilities, the better for everybody.
Well, I think it can be an opportunity because I guess they wanted to wait until next year because they wanted the audience, and they were like, okay, if this only lasts for a year, we can just wait and do something next year. And fine, but if it goes on, they will have to address it, and they will have to either make it online, make it without an audience or with a limited audience. Like, they will you can't go on with several years being cancelled, because then it just, like people say on the radio, it's the new normal. Like, you need to adapt, you need to find new ways. But I think they definitely did something right with the digital content, and they should keep doing that, and they should keep like engaging artists that were passed out, previous artists, and with short bite-sized content that people having any kind of interest could enjoy, and that would actually make them grow into being more active and more engaged in the Eurovision community. And for example, a lot of what they did on Instagram was to ask for people to vote, which is a good way to know actually what works or not. Because if you actually get people voting for a song they like, well, you see, you can see that you have an active community and people are willing to engage. And in a pandemic where people try to hold on to anything that kind of feels normal, anything they like, you have a great opportunity to just grow that and offer new stuff and just adapt in case at some point in the future you have a similar problem and you're like, oh, but we tried these new things, this is not a problem.
Leslie acknowledges that every Eurovision artist probably feels the same way about alternatives for next year's competition, but keeps a positive attitude about handling it in the most professional way possible.
I think, like, the majority of people, I think I can speak for a lot of the fans and the artists here when I say this, that obviously everyone wants it to happen in the way it always happens, with the thousands of people in the stadium and the people, the families at home on TV and the green room. Obviously that would be the preference. And then from what I can read and follow and speaking to the teams, the next thing that I think would happen would be just a no audience show. And again, I think that would be doable. As far as a digital show going ahead, I think, again, I probably speak for a lot of the artists, I think it would be a little bit upsetting for it to be that. Now, if that is the only way that I can represent Ireland 2021 with a fantastic song, I will, as per usual, just continue to do my very, very best to make that as special as possible, and know that I have in some way universally and have signed a soul contract to be the person to do that over the past this year and next year, and I'll be okay with that. But obviously, I would love personally anyway for it to be as close to what the historic show is, but we'll take what we can get, you know?
With so much to digest and consider, I decided that I needed another perspective, so I asked Insight's own Ellie Chalkley for her thoughts on the range of perspectives that our digital quartet had expressed.
So what I've noticed from the 2020 Eurovision cancellation and all of the new activities and the digital replacements that have come in to fill the gap is that we all agree that there has to be something called a Eurovision. And perhaps this is an opportunity to look and see what parts of Eurovision we consider to be non-negotiable, what has to be there at the core for it to be the contest. And I think it definitely includes all of the countries in one place. And we really want it to include an audience who can all be together and wave flags. But is that something we're going to be able to have? We can also say that we'd like to bring in some of the new things that we've had to do this year because we've not been able to really be together. The Eurovision home concerts, I think everybody basically wants to keep those as part of the promo trail. I think it really humanizes all of the Eurovision artists. It brings you to their living rooms, or in Elisa from Portugal's case, into her bedroom. It it allows you to see the other side of artists from previous years, like Leia Cirque's incredible DJ routine, which, you know, it allowed you to see so much more musical breadth to her. Or how even Senhit has taken the cancellation and made it into a visual concept album lasting a whole year. So we're seeing lots of these new opportunities. And like everything after COVID, it won't be a matter of going back to properly adopting everything from the before world, or doing everything in this new remote way. It will, of course, like everything, be a hybrid approach. And we have this opportunity to take the things that we have innovated and that we really liked from this period where we've had to very much make our own fun and bring them into what we consider to be the contest.
So who knows what's going to happen next? Will there be a Eurovision in May 2021? Will it be in Rotterdam? Will there be loads of fans there, or some fans, or no fans? Now we know the four main scenarios the EBU has for May 2021, as well as November's Junior Eurovision running as a fully remote broadcast, the Eurovision Song Contest will continue to evolve, just as it has since the moment it was first broadcast onto our screens. Every change has been a response to the needs and desires of broadcasters, artists, and audiences of the time. It is possible that the digital additions to Eurovision programming would have been thought up and produced regardless of the pandemic, but is it likely to have happened so quickly and with so much buzz around it? Whatever your answer, Eurovision has evolved again in reaction to these circumstances. However you feel about it, this coming Eurovision season is going to be different from previous ones, and for both the usual and newfound reasons, I am very excited for it. And now, without further ado, the guitars. Written and hosted by Finn Ross Russell with Katia Black, Eric Nelson, Melanie Tutakova and Leslie Roy, Digital Quartet's Eurovision 2020 is an Island Life production for ESC Insight, escinsight.com. Visit escinsight.com to find out more.